It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. In the immediate aftermath of World War II, a seismic shift occurred in the relationships between the United States and other countries involved in the war. The Russians, who had been our allies in the fight against Nazi Germany, were suddenly the enemy. And Germany was suddenly a country we wanted to befriend, especially its scientists, who were seen as vitally important to winning the space race with the Soviet Union. It's how a German rocket scientist named Arthur Rudolph ended up becoming an American citizen and helping the Apollo 11 moon landing become a reality. But Rudolph was later deported as a Nazi war criminal. Mr. Rudolph's story is at the heart of a new stage play called Some Brighter Distance, which has its official opening tonight at the City Theater on the South Side. I'm joined now in studio by the playwright Keith Redeen, the author of Some Brighter Distance, and the director Tracy Brigden. Welcome, both of you, to Essential Pittsburgh. Great to have you here.
Thanks so much.
I'm going to gush a little bit. Marvelous work. I saw it last night, the last preview night. It's quite a story, and Arthur Rudolph, of course, is someone who played a huge role in one of the most significant events in U.S. history, and yet, unlike Wernher von Braun, who was also a Nazi Party member, he is not that well known. So, Keith, how did you get onto this story?
Well, I had known the story about the history of how we had this Operation Paperclip, which was at the end of World War II, smuggling over the Nazi scientists. And I had done some research for this particular play, and I saw in a footnote that there was this scientist, Arthur Rudolph. And of the thousands of scientists that we brought over with Nazi pasts, he was the only one, the only scientist who was ever prosecuted as a war criminal, stripped of his citizenship, and deported back to Germany. So I thought, how did that happen? And there really wasn't much of information about that until I started digging and doing research. So I found it fascinating that of all the people, and we knew their past and we knew what they had done, this was the only person who was ever prosecuted.
Right. This is like the Inspector Renault in Casablanca. All of a sudden, he comes out of the, walks away from the roulette table and says, I'm shutting this place down. You know, why? Because I'm shocked to find out that there's gambling going on here. Mm-hmm. You're winning, sir.
Yes.
The same type of thing where, how was it that 30 years or more after we brought him over here, along with other German scientists, how was it that suddenly they discovered that Arthur Rudolph was involved in some atrocities?
Well, the point was the U.S. government always knew that he was involved in atrocities, as well as Wernher von Braun and another scientists who were working on the Apollo project. But very briefly, there was a law student who then worked for the Justice Department who found some out-of-print book, memoirs of a survivor of this particular facility with Arthur Rudolph was the production manager, and it described a lot of the atrocities and the horrible things that went on in the thousands of, I think it was close to 20,000 people died building these tunnels and building these missiles for the Reich at the end of the war. And he had decided that this person needed to be prosecuted. And he did research, built a file, went to the Justice Department and said, if you don't prosecute this guy, I will make public that we've been harboring him. And he kind of pressured the Justice Department into prosecuting him. And the story I always heard was that the Justice Department in the 80s said, well, thank God Wernher von Braun is dead because otherwise Ronald Reagan would be very mad because Ronald Reagan supposedly liked Wernher von Braun. He was a very charming, sophisticated, charismatic man, whereas Arthur Rudolph was a genius engineer but not as well known.
Right. And what's amazing, Tracy Brigden, one of the more intriguing and revealing things about Some Brighter Distance is the way that it illustrates how people like Disney were bringing Nazis into our living rooms. There's a video clip played behind the actor portraying von Braun, David Whalen, who does a marvelous job in this play, as do the other actors, and we'll talk some more about the performances coming up. But in this one scene, he's he is giving a lesson on the history of rocket science, which actually happened in an episode of The Wonderful World of Disney. How were you able to put that together?
Well, we have a terrific design team, and a gentleman named Jordan Harrison, who recently graduated from CMU, did all the media and projections for the production. And so we basically took from the YouTube clips we could find of the actual performance on The Wonderful World of Disney of this show called Man in Space. And David is speaking the lines that Wernher von Braun spoke in the show. And we have the actual background of the animated rockets and fireworks and all the things that were in the actual show. And it's one of the funnier moments in the play.
It really is. It's funny. And yet you sit there thinking, you know, my God, Disney was able to make the Nazis seem like these friendly guys next door. Here's how we build the rockets,
yep.
And which the U.S. Is obviously relying on to advance the space program. And you know, how much is this a story, Keith, of how the United States makes a deal with the devil? We knew who we were dealing with when we recruited these scientists to come to America, but there was a goal that was seen by the government as greater than whatever atrocities, whatever these guys did in their former lives. We're going to Americanize them. They're going to become part of us. They're on our side, and we're going to do great things.
Yeah. I think that the feeling back then was because of the threat of the Soviet Union and the Cold War, they felt like, well, we know these guys are Nazis, but better that there are Nazis than the Russian Nazis. So I think that was the deal. And as you said, they signed a pact with the devil. And we have a number of references to the story of Faust, selling your soul for science and for knowledge. And I always think of Arthur Rudolph as Faust, you know, with his beloved, and he sacrifices her. And then I said to David Whalen, who plays Wernher von Braun, I said, and you're the blonde Satan. Which he said, I'll take that as a compliment.
Yes, he pulled it off. He really did. And, you know, Rudolph's dedication to pure science is at the center of the moral and ethical storm that this play deals with. And, Jonathan Tyndall plays Arthur Rudolph, and he gives a great performance because even when we find out what Rudolph has done, we kind of sympathize with him, don't we? Because maybe to a lesser extent, aren't we all kind of grappling with this struggle with the darker forces available to us to help us achieve our goals that we want so badly, our dreams in life?
Yeah, I think that's the crux of the play. And that was one of the things working with Tracy. We've been collaborating for many years on different plays, and this is the third collaboration that we've done at City Theater. And she saw the very early versions of the play, which were much more oriented towards the science and the history, sometimes too much so. And to Tracy's credit, she said, we have to be involved in the human story. And that's really what you made me focus on.
Yeah, and we thought, what would it be like to be Marta, Arthur Rudolph's long-suffering wife, and be dragged across the continents for his pursuit of rockets and going to the moon? And so the story of Arthur and Marta has really become the spine of the play, and I think that's where the heart of it is. And it does make you more sympathetic to this man, because you realize he had a family, he had a wife, he had a daughter, and he was making choices like all of us have to make. He made some bad ones. But he ultimately was trying to do the best for his family and for his dreams.
And you are exposed first to his dream, this idea which he's conjuring up in the 30s of, you know, the idea that a man could be on the, we can get a man to the moon. He's already thinking of this over 30 years before it happens in Germany, you know, having no idea what's to come in Germany with Hitler and the war and the death camps, and then coming to America and then getting involved in the space race here. So we're exposed to the dream, which in the way that you present this and Keith, in the way that you wrote it, I think, gets us sort of on board until the very end. You know, then it's like, okay, we have to disassociate ourselves. We can't identify with this character because of what we find out that he's done. But in the beginning, it's like all the dreams that we grow up with, right? Something amazing and fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. And we all had to laugh because, you know, the State of the Union address the other day, President Obama cited our great triumph of the moon landing. And America does continually through the years cite that as one of our great triumphs, which it was. But people forget, you know, at what cost.
Or they never knew.
Right.
I guess a lot of it was a revelation to me. It was a revelation to the person I came with. We didn't fully really know the story or you know, like the U.S. government probably didn't want to know. We're talking here on Essential Pittsburgh about an amazing place, Some Brighter Distance. It opens tonight officially at the City Theater on the South Side. We're here with the playwright Keith Radin, and he is the author of Some Brighter Distance and the director, Tracy Brigden. And Tracy, this story unfolds over a 50-year period, you know, going from 1934 to 1984. And it's really interesting, the devices that you use on the stage to move this story along at a very crisp pace. This play clocks in at like 90 minutes, maybe, if that?
Not quite.
Not quite.
Yeah, and it does. We have about 30 scenes. It spans from 1933 to 1984. And to the actor's credit, particularly Jonathan Tindall, who plays Arthur.
And who never has a wardrobe change.
No, he really rarely leaves the stage. He leaves the stage one time in the whole production. And he really makes us believe he's a 75-year-old man and a 30-year-old man throughout the course of the play, as does Elizabeth Rich, who plays his wife, Marta. She's the one, of course, the one woman in the play. Her costumes really help us with what year we're in because, of course, women's clothes really tell a lot. So she has the most costume changes, lots of quick changes between, you know, her 1950s housewife in Huntsville, Alabama, in a kitchen to her kind of mod 1969 moon landing in a California living room. And again, my design team has done incredible work having that. Those jumps in major decades just seem seamless, almost like a movie. And it, you know, we joke with Keith as we were piecing this together that he, in certain ways, did write a movie, and we've realized it on the stage because it is pretty seamless. There's jump cuts from, you know, the 80s to the 30s to the 50s and back.
And this easily could be end up being adapted for the screen, but I guess the goal here is to get this maybe to, Broadway, right?
You know,
your
I just
lips to God's ears.
Yeah, we just want to try to open it tonight and have Pittsburgh audiences see it, you know, and start there, because it's been a process of really refining the play and really finding, as you've said, finding the most theatrical, exciting, economical way to tell the story that covers so much ground.
And of course, at City Theater, we're always eager to create these world premieres and hope they have a great life beyond Pittsburgh. But first and foremost, we're creating these productions for our Pittsburgh audience.
How disturbing, I don't know what kind of feedback you've gotten, but when people realize, as you pointed out earlier, Tracy, you know, referring to President Obama's State of the Union address, you know, the moon landing just remains at the pinnacle of examples of American ingenuity and what we can do. But so much of the contributions to it was by these Nazi scientists, ex-Nazis by that time, but Nazis and committers of atrocities nonetheless. And so this is... It's a well-told story. It's a compelling story, but it is disturbing, and it's going to upset our American psyche a little bit, isn't it?
I think that's our intention is not to disturb people,
no,
but to provoke questions. But it was interesting. An older woman came up to me after one performance, and she said, "You know, I'm Jewish. My family had to flee Europe to escape the Nazis. I saw this play, and I found that I was sympathetic to this person, and that disturbed me very much." It was very upsetting and provocative to her that she had to go to that place to understand somebody who had the dream of putting a man on the moon and yet at the same time was party to these horrible atrocities. And so I think that's what, you know, interesting theater and drama should do. It should linger with us. It should provoke questions and along the way have a human story.
And it also echoes through the ages to some moral, ethical questions we might raise today about choices that our leaders are making. You know, one could argue that the moon landing and reaching the moon before the Russians was one of the seismic shifts in America's power and what led to the next 60 years. But we did make some unpleasant choices to get there. And whether those are justified or not is one of the things that I think the play makes you question.
And certainly, again, so much credit has to go to Jonathan Tyndall, because I used to say Das Boot is the only movie that would ever make me feel sorry for a Nazi. And then you see Tyndall, who, unlike David Whalen's portrayal of Werner von Braun, you know, who's so arrogant, and you just he's just the guy that you just can't stand. Arthur Rudolph, though, he's kind of soft-spoken. He's kind of this everyman. And Jonathan Tyndall, with his performance, makes you feel for him, feel something because of, I'm not sure how to put my finger on exactly what he does. Maybe Keith or Tracy can explain.
I think it's, as you pointed out, we see early on that he has this dream and he's so passionate about achieving this through science and through his imagination. And I think that we all associate that, you know, of having that great dream and spending your entire life trying to see it happen. And then I find the scene when they're watching the moon landing really touching, that she says, you know, after everything we've gone through, all the sacrifices we've made, you never stopped believing this was going to happen. And this is the day that we can celebrate, not just as scientists, but as Americans. And the irony is that he was not asked to the control room at Houston. He had to watch it in his living room in, like, Santa Barbara, California, thousands of miles away, and not on television and not in the spotlight. And he's one of those people, good or bad, who's not in the spotlight. You know, one of those stories that say so much, but again, no one knows about him.
Right, and that's a big part of why, certainly. And also, too, I guess what you have these realizations about things as you discuss it, as we are now. And I think part of it, too, is that his dream wasn't world domination. He would not have endorsed any of, you know, given the choice, which a lot of these people didn't have. And of course, that's an argument that comes out of the Nuremberg trials and everything else. You know, I was just following orders. But if he was truly given a choice, he probably would not, unlike other Nazis, have chosen to inflict the kind of horror that the Nazis eventually did. And the fact that his dream is something that we as Americans can identify with makes him maybe more of a sympathetic character?
Maybe. I think they always dreamed of going to the moon. There's a line in the play. It's like, well, we always wanted to go to the moon. Just don't tell Hitler that. You know, because Hitler was like, build the rockets for destruction.
Right.
And I think, Tracy, I think you would agree, their dream was never for destruction. Their dream was for science.
Always. And I also think what the play really points out through the character of Davis and Turner is that the U.S. government is equally culpable, because it's the character of Turner who is the one that brings him to America, who whitewashes his record, walks him across the Mexican border, and brings him into the States. And so we have as much blood on our hands in a way as he does.
And as you pointed out earlier, Tracy, this kind of tale is an integral part of a lot of American history that we really don't want to confront. So one of the compelling things about this play is we do confront that. And I don't know if I need to do a spoiler alert about when they talk about Neil Armstrong, mm-hmm. when he lands, what yeah. he says. Can we
yeah.
talk
okay.
about
yeah,
this?
Sure.
Okay, because I've never thought about this before. But Neil Armstrong says, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. That's what we remember. That's the quote. That's what he says. But apparently that's not what, and somebody came up with what he was going to say. It wasn't something he thought of at the spur of the moment. And he kind of botched it, right?
I think it was one small step for a man, giant leap for mankind. And yeah, you know, I think he was coming down the ladder, and I think the last thing he was thinking about was, like, how are they going to quote me on this one? But yes, there's always been this debate. And so that scene, those lines came from my grandmother, actually, mm-hmm. who, when she saw the moon landing, would continually tell me, you know, what he said doesn't make sense. It's the same thing. And also she said, I'm convinced that they weren't really on the moon, that it was in a television studio, and it was actors coming down, and, you know, we've heard that conspiracy before.
Right. So here are the characters having this conversation that your grandmother actually had. Very interesting. So, you know, I think we've learned a lot about how this script came together, and how long is the run of Some Bright Distance?
It runs till February 14th.
Okay.
Tuesday through Sunday, many shows, many times.
It's quite a story, an amazingly well-told, well-written play, and I think that Pittsburghers will get a lot. If you happen to get there, I think you'll be glad you did. Some Brighter Distance is the name of the play. We've been talking with the playwright, Keith Radin, the author of Some Brighter Distance, the director, Tracy Brigden, and again, the official opening of Some Brighter Distance is at the City Theater tonight on the South Side. Thank you so much, both of you, for being with us. And congratulations.
Thank you for being a great audience member.
Coming up, how you'll be able to see the five brightest planets in the sky all at once. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.